Welcome to Tech Nation Health, reimagining the future of health and healthcare with the emergence of new technologies and breakthrough science. Not everyone wants to walk around being constantly monitored by their digital devices, but then there are those who relish it. These folks would likely be among the 200 million people who've bought smartwatches in the last year and a half. That's right, 200 million. And you've got to know, these watches do more, much more than tell time. In fact, sometimes they do you a very big favor, which we see in the tweet our chief correspondent, Dr. Daniel Kraft, is about to share.
This is a tweet from February of 2018 by an individual. Put it on Twitter. Quote is, "Never thought a stupid little wrist computer I bought 2 years ago would save my life. Saw my heart rate go up, ended up being a pulmonary embolism." And on the tweet, there's a picture of this patient. There's a picture of a screenshot from his smartwatch that shows his heart rate being tagged at 189, whereas normal heart rate's in the 50s and 60s. And so this gentleman was smart enough to notice that wasn't normal, 189, and brought himself to the emergency room. And when they did the evaluation,
they said, "Don't move."
He had a big clot in his lungs, and that it can be definitely life-threatening. And this shows us the power of now a consumer device, in this case, an early first-generation Apple Watch that can now detect heart rate, indicating something was going on. The next stage are for these to start informing us, when we're not even aware of it, that something's happening with my heart rate. My Apple Watch, my Fitbit, many other consumer devices can track heart rate. What's interesting now, there are platforms. One I have embedded in my Apple Watch, a company called AliveCore. It is essentially an EKG that can live in my smartwatch or on my smartphone, so that if my heart rate was running at 180, it will trigger me to say, "Hey, Daniel, go do an EKG." I can now, as I'm showing you in the studio, but no one can see, doing a real-time two-lead EKG on my watch, which you don't need a cardiologist to read. The AI, artificial intelligence algorithms, can determine, do I have a normal sinus rhythm or am I in atrial fibrillation? And that can be sent to the cloud and potentially to my healthcare team.
Now, I have to tell you that when you're saying it's on your Apple Watch, you've got a little app on your Apple Watch, but also you have the wristband, which has a metal piece in it, if you will. I don't know what else is in that you hold. So you have to have the wristband part, and you have to have the app. But together, you can really watch what's going on.
Right, and this is actually FDA approved. It's over-the-counter. You can buy it online without a doctor's prescription. And it's an example of this digitization of health diagnostics, which isn't just a fad now. This particular platform has been studied by academics, comparing it to full-on 12-lead EKGs. And while not 100% perfect, it now gives a patient with atrial fibrillation and their cardiologist a new lens to manage their heart condition, to tweak their medications, to bring them to the emergency room if they need it. And the fact that they're now doing a million plus EKGs a month, the leverage of powering the crowd and continuing to learn and improve the algorithms will create new data sets and ways of managing heart disease.
Now, you've got a couple things going on here. One is just detecting that you've got some action going on, and it's able to do that in your watch. And I guess it's also able to do that in your phone with a different app?
Right. Sticking with the watch for a moment, it can often track my activity, my steps. If I'm running up and down stairs and my heart rate's 160, great. But if I'm sitting down and not moving and my heart rate's high, that might be the example of this check engine light for the body. Hey, Daniel, something's going on. Let's do your EKG or make sure that your heart rate isn't really 180, because there can be false positives. We can bring these sorts of diagnostics now to our magical supercomputers, smartphones. These little attachments, just like the one on my watch from AliveCore, can live on the back of your phone and allow you also to do an EKG. And these can be used not just by cardiac patients, but for screening. I've taken these to conferences and meetings and have them passed around, and invariably, one out of 100 or 200 will find that they have a abnormal heart rhythm they didn't even know they had. Or if you're a triage nurse in a clinic or an emergency room, someone comes with chest pain, you say, "Here, hold this. hold this phone," and we can take a quick look without putting on the 12 leads of the EKG to see if you have what we call ST elevation, which might indicate an acute heart attack. So these are starting simple, but an example of our sort of digital diagnostics toolbox, which are going to become more and more common.
Now, I want to ask you, is there a difference between just, it's kind of checking you and it sees something funny. And the times when it says, hey, you should do an EKG, is that a bigger app within the phone?
That's the same app from this company, AliveCore. But now this data will actually flow to my Apple iPhone. I can connect that data back to my medical record and physician at Stanford. Some hospitals now are collaborating with Apple, and the data can flow between my smartphone and not just my watch, but my connected scale, how many steps I'm taking, if I have other applications or sensors. We can start to pull this data together and hopefully make that useful clinically. One of the challenges we've talked about on this on prior shows, we'd often know what this digital exhaust means. And we're starting to see trials, one called the baseline trial from Verily, Google Health, for 10,000 individuals to have their digital exhaust. I like to call it the digitome. It might be their sleep data, their heart rate data, their movement, their vital signs, their medical records understood from a 10,000 patient level. And just in late spring of this year, 2018, the National Institutes of Health launched the All of Us trial. It's a 1 million patient opt-in volunteer data donor trial. I've signed up. You can sign up at allofus.org to volunteer your medical record, the data from your connected smartwatch, your step information, your genomics, if you have that. So we're going to learn how to connect the dots, because what might be abnormal on my watch and EKG may not be that for Moira or someone else with other issues, conditions, medications. So we're starting to see the ability to collect sort of this massive, almost a Framingham trial on steroids, so that when we get information from our digital
exhaust. And remind people what the Framingham trial was.
The Framingham trial has been going on, I think, continuously for 60 years. The town of Framingham in western Massachusetts had a series of volunteers. Many of them were medical professionals, nurses, doctors, and followed them over their entire lives. Understood, for example, what does their cholesterol number mean and correlating to that risk of heart disease. That's driven a lot of the guidelines that drive a tremendous amount of medicine based on a pretty small cohort of mostly Caucasian, European heritage individuals. But we need to understand risk factors and data from different races, different ethnic groups, different locations. And now with trials like All of Us, we're going to see that democratized, meaning anyone can play a part. Anyone can potentially volunteer to be a data donor, opting in to share certain data, not necessarily all of it. And when we have that lens and we apply data analytics, machine learning, epigenetics all together, we'll learn that it's not just your vital signs, it's not just your genome or your microbiome, but it may be what zip code you're in, your social network strength, subtle new signs and digital breadcrumbs and virtual and vital sign type breadcrumbs that we can use to be smarter about preventing disease, diagnosing it, and treating it.
Now, I hope you don't accuse me of being a Luddite here. Well, a lot of people just want to live their lives, but they might have a concern about stroke, or they might have a concern about heart, as we're talking about here. And I guess my question is, can you just have something that says, hey, you've got a problem, like this person turned out to say, you've got a pulmonary embolism. It's like, whoa, that's pretty simple. But not to have all of this data, not to have all these things hooked up and steps and all that. Is there a way to just do it simply, or it's everything, you got to be all in or all out?
I think it's not a zero-sum game. We need smart design thinking, just like with our modern cars. We've talked about the idea of a check engine light for the body. There's 300 sensors in my car. I don't know about most of them. There's one in every single piston.
He's not a robot. I'm not talking to a robot. I need you all to know that.
But my dashboard will say, hey, Daniel, check engine light is on, and will hopefully mean I go to my mechanic and plug in the computer, and they can do the deep diagnostics. So you don't need to be a cardiologist or an epidemiologist to understand and synthesize all this information. We need to bring it to the early action mode, i.e. that check engine light, to bring you to the emergency room early or to adjust your medications before they're out of whack. That, I think, is part of the big potential of the future of health and medicine.
And I have to say, there's going to be this, I just want enough. And then, hey, I just want to live my life.
And how we communicate that is different. I mean, we talked on other segments about the age wave, baby boomers. We need to communicate to a 70-year-old differently what their interface looks like on their app, what language you use versus a millennial. You know, millennials have grown up on Snapchat and Twitter and Facebook, while older folks are certainly on those. It means it we can't communicate health information in the same way, depending on age, culture, language, education. And a part and a big challenge for healthcare is to translate these new technologies and signals for individuals wherever they might be and however they might want to interact with it.
Well, Daniel, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Ramar.
Dr. Daniel Kraft is chief correspondent of TechNation Health and the founder and chair of Exponential Medicine. The Exponential Medicine Conference 2018 is scheduled for early November at the Hotel Coronado in San Diego. More information is available at exponentialmedicine.com. For TechNation Health, I'm Moira Gunn.
TechNation and its regular segment BiotechNation are produced at the studios of KQED-FM in San Francisco. Executive producer is Matt Gardner. The director of technical production is Monte Carlos. And audio engineers include Howard Gelman, Seal Mahler, and Larry Upton. Our theme music was composed by Ann Nachtrieb-Zesiger and Robert Powell, with title creation provided by NameLab Incorporated of San Francisco. Program information and internet audio is available on the web at technation.com. TechNation and BiotechNation are productions of TechNation Media. I'm Paul Landcor.